Welcome and thank you for joining Save Our Sisters Unplugged. My name is Noreen Foy and I'm the founder and director of the Save Our Sisters not-for-profit group, mentor to women of all ages, and host of this wonderful podcast. This podcast is all about resilience, perseverance, and managing life after trauma so you can live life on your terms. We explore topics related to personal growth and navigating life's challenges, where I empower women to share their journeys of survival to success through the power of storytelling. We're going to honor our truth in this podcast because I know what it's like to be abused, be in toxic relationships, divorced, and be a single parent. I've been there. I know what you're going through. And that's why I'm here to tell you that what has happened to you does not define who you are or who you're going to be. By sharing these journeys of survival to success, I want you to know that you're not alone, and I hope that hearing them inspires you. So join me as we share, strive higher, and reclaim empowerment. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Save Our Sisters Unplugged podcast. Today, we have the honor of speaking with an incredible woman who has overcome immense challenges to carve out a path of success and empowerment for herself. She is a learned woman, and she holds a doctoral degree in healthcare administration and education, a master's in organizational psychology and administration, a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and administration, where she holds numerous certifications. She has over 25 years as a human resources expert and nearly 25 years of experience as a real estate professional. Here to tell us how she broke the chains of adversity and went from victim to victorious, please welcome Dr. Felicia Harvey. Welcome, girlie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is such an honor to finally meet you. You know, we've been talking and we have so much in common. And now that I've learned that you're in my hometown, we're going to definitely have to link up. And yes. Just listing out all of your accolades, you're going to make me go out and get a master's degree.
Yay.
My schedule is already so full. I'm like, I don't even know if I can show a master's degree in, but you know, we'll see. You know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. So how was your day?
Oh, my day seems to be getting longer and longer and longer, but I'm excited about today.
Par for the course.
Planting more seeds.
Exactly. Well, and let's dive in. So can you take us back to the beginning of your journey? I know a lot of trauma that we suffer as adults stems from our childhood. What was it like for you growing up and navigating through your experiences of domestic violence and sexual abuse?
Well, first and foremost, I, in our private conversation, I had talked about, you know, my journey with transitioning and domestic violence in the family. And because of the domestic violence, we moved a lot. My mother had 5 children and we moved a lot. And so because of that, I changed schools 13 times before graduating from high school. And I know in the introduction, you talked about the different degrees that I hold, but the one that I want to speak on that is near and dear to me is my original PhD, which is my public high school diploma. And the reason why that one is so important is because when you are a child who changed schools 13 times, the mission of graduating from high school seems few and far between. And so I want to make sure that from a foundation perspective that I always pay homage to having accomplished that because of those changes with the schools and things like that, I struggle sometimes with building relationships. And in the beginning, I remember 1979, May 19th is my birthday, 1979, my mother had moved to what we call the projects, which at the time was Cabrini Green. They no longer exist. And during that move, she was escaping some things, the dark clouds that were hanging over her head. And so right. She wanted to, you know, get some foundation and start over. And that's where she landed. And so although the housing projects, they get a bad reputation, I want to say that the one thing that my sister and I were able to get out of that transition, although there were some very dark days, including the times when the sexual abuse started, we had a community that paid attention to us, that cared about us. And those people were an extension to our family. And so although the projects, you know, they get a bad reputation, I can say that people were family and people looked out for you. So in mentioning that, because my mother wanted something better and something more for us, one of the things she did was she really pushed the relationship between us and God and us knowing who God was. And so I, being the oldest daughter, I did have a brother who unfortunately was inflicted by muscular dystrophy, and that onset happened. During that time is when that reality came knocking at my mother's door. So I used to go to church a lot. And one of the deacons from our church, he used to visit our home and he would help my mother with bills and stuff like that and also taking me to church. But he's also that person that inflicted the first set of harm that I was aware of by way of raping me after leaving church.
I'm so sorry.
Because of that, you know, many people, they ask, well, how do you still believe in God and how do you still trust people? Now, I can say today I am a little more trusting than I was before, but having experienced that at the ripe age of 7, trust did not come easy. And because my mother sent me to church and it was meant to be a good deed, I never told her. I never shared with her what was happening to me when I would go to church. In fact, I didn't tell my mother about the encounters until I was 30 years old and 7 months pregnant. Oh, wow. And many people, they question, well, why didn't you say anything? Well, why did it take so long? And how did you keep that a secret? Well, you know, sometimes when you are a child, many of us, we become the caregivers of our caregivers. And although my mother was charged by God to be my caregiver, she wasn't in the best position to care not only for me, but for other children. And so when this person who came around and under the auspice of doing goodwill started to inflict pain on me, the last thing I wanted to do, me being her caregiver now unofficially, was to inflict more pain on her by telling her that the person that she's trusting to introduce me to God and build that relationship is also the person who is harming me sexually. And so I didn't tell. And when I finally told, my mother was afflicted with cancer. So you talking about her having to live with the agony of knowing that, you know, her oldest daughter was impacted by such a dark secret and how that showed up in so many ways, you know?
Well, you know, that's a mouthful. You said a mouthful right there. And we have a lot to unpack with all that you've said. First and foremost, I want to say, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. You know, sexual assault is so rampant. It's a personal thing. It's a personal thing. I've only just started talking about my own. And so it really cuts, you know?
Yeah.
It just the anger that the people that are designed to protect us don't, you know? And even when you tell them, they want you to just stuff your feelings down. They don't acknowledge what you've went through, especially as a young child, because you don't know anything about that. That's the area of your body that your parents tell you not to have other people look at, touch, whatever. So when that part of your body is violated and then you tell them and then they do nothing, it's almost like an instant betrayal. It's like, how are you not taking this in? And then you talk about moving schools 13 times.
Yes.
So because of my own family drama, I actually went to 3 different high schools. And I know how it is to move from school to school and always be the new kid, but 13 times is very excessive. I mean, that is a significant disruption. How did you cope with constantly having to just be uprooted and having to adapt to new environments all the time?
Well,
because you couldn't make friends.
Well, I made friends because I was a fighter.
Okay.
But that's not, that wasn't my default position. That was my defensive position. Because one of the reasons I became a fighter was because when the sexual abuse started at 7, I wasn't able to fight and I was muted. And so changing schools 13 times and starting over and making friends and things like that, I always had to prove myself. And so part of me proving myself was rolling up the sleeves. Once we got past that, then people was able to get to the heart of me. I was able to get to the heart of them. And I still have relationships with people from all those schools to this day. And I'm nearly 52 years old. So although I started with the fight, you know, there's a thin line between love and hate, the yin and the yang, I equally loved. So, that's one of the things that I did to survive. The other thing that I did was I wanted people to see my heart because the physical was tampered with. And so I never wanted people to see me. So I would say in a lot of ways, I kind of sort of, you know, people would always say, oh, you're so nice. You're so sweet. I just love you. You have such a bubbly personality. You have the biggest smile. But I also suffered from imposter syndrome because I didn't feel the way I looked to people. Mm-hmm. The way I presented was basically, I should have got an Oscar for my performance because I didn't feel that way on the inside. And how the other ways that I managed that was I traveled the world, not physically. I traveled the world mentally. I would write. I would pretend. I would be in the dark and I would let my imagination take me to places. So those were some of the ways that I managed to be able to function in those environments. But the other thing that I having to be exposed to so many different people at so many different times at such a young age is I just learned to be able to see the heart of people.
Yeah. So you didn't let that ruin you. You didn't let that ruin you or cage you in, make you go within yourself and withdraw.
Right.
You didn't let that change who you were at the core at all.
I was withdrawn in my personal relationships with my intimate partners, but I was not that way with my friends. People who I consider my friends, I was one person. But people who wanted to be intimately connected with me, walls of steel.
And that's so funny because those are the people that we should be able to trust. But, you know, I guess when you grew up in an environment where you were violated by people that you were supposed to trust, it kind of just makes that wall go up. Mm-hmm. And I know healing from trauma is a journey and it looks different for everyone else. You talked about how you manage, but what steps did you take to actually heal yourself from all of that?
Well, one, I talked about building relationships with people. So once I found people that I trusted, I latched on to them because I wanted to be fed by their spirit. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things. The other thing is I went back to that good book because although I was violated in the church, I still believed in religion.
And that's good because some trust people in church, go the other way.
Yeah. My trust in church and the physical building and what happens in that building, of course, that was shattered. But the spiritual side of things and the basic principles, I tapped into that because I was able to, although I was inflicted by so much pain and agony, I still was able to go outside and see the sun and know the beauty of that. I was still able to see flowers and smell them and know that they have a sweet smell. And I knew that they fed other areas of my body, my mind, my body, my soul outside of that. So those are the things that I use to manage. And then when I would find myself questioning that, you know, the Bible always has the answer for a question. So I would dig a little bit deeper because I was like, that doesn't really quite make sense. Let me read what happened before that and read what happened after that to get some context. And then the other thing that I did, which I did not realize was powerful because I just was ignorant in that sense, but I started building relationships with people of different generations, young, old, and people who I would consider my equal. Now, at the time, it didn't seem very popular, but it was beneficial because I was able to sit down and listen to some of what we would call the old heads. I was able to listen to the old heads and let them give me historical information, historical experience, hear what they did, how they survived. Because although
wisdom,
I was
all that good wisdom.
Oh, yeah. Because although I was a fighter, I still was a follower in some sense. So I would follow the yellow brick road because I knew Dorothy got to the promised land following the yellow brick road. So
yes,
like, I don't always have to reinvent the wheel. So for me, the seniors, the older people that I connected with, they were my foundation, my yellow brick road. They gave me that historical thing. The people who were my peers, those folks, they're like, man, we each other, okay, we'll hold hands and kumbaya our way through this journey.
Right.
And then the younger folks, I was able to manage my building relationship with younger folks because their vision was a lot different. They could see what, at the time, I thought a microwave was what? That was like the Jetsons, like who ever heard of that, microwave? But these, the younger folks could see beyond that. They could see vehicles driving themselves. I couldn't even imagine it. So those are the things that I did, and those are tried and true. And I still use those things to manage because I still have some doubts sometimes.
Yeah. Well, of course, because we're all human. And even though we have all the wisdom, sometimes the wisdom can get a little bit overwhelming. We can get overwhelmed with everything because now we have to put it in the right place.
Yes.
You know, and then not all wisdom is good wisdom either. So you have to sift.
Yes.
You have to sift through all the good parts that you can take and apply to your life and then leave the rest by the wayside. But it's good that you had that community of people that you can go to and they would be able to sit with you and commune with you and give you some of the tools, because I think that's what we really need. And this is one of the reasons why I actually created this platform, is to give women spaces that not only tell their truth, but they can feel a sense of community and to feel comfortable coming and getting advice, or as I call it, sister wisdom from other women, because we have grown up in a society where we don't talk about a whole lot of things, especially sexual assault.
Yeah, you know, secret, the ugly secret.
It's all about keep your business in the house and all these different things, but keeping your business in the house is how my sister might have gotten something happening to her. She might have gotten fondled. Your cousin might have gotten something happen to her. You know, we need to stop that. We need to just do away with that. We're in 2024. Right. Let's everyone just start talking about what has gone on with us.
While painful, still talk about it. Yes.
Yeah. And that's the key right there, is talking about it and bringing awareness to it. I just read something today that just completely disgusted me, and it's over in India. There was a young lady and her husband. They went out there. I think they were traveling through the city. I can't remember what they were doing, but she was gang raped by seven guys. And that is so rampant in that country. They didn't want to let the women protest about it. You know, and so the women had signs up in me, just give me chills. They said, we can have this happen to us. We can get raped, but we can't protest about not getting raped. It's like, women are oppressed, and they know it's an epidemic. And they'll lock the guys up. They caught a couple of them, and they would lock them up. But why is that even such an epidemic, almost?
Because of the muting. Because of the mute.
And I think society always lets men do what they want.
You know, I can say this. So being a sexual abuse survivor, and I talked about one incident, but there's been others. The one thing that I think a lot of people don't realize when you talk about the taboo is we feel like we have a scarlet letter. And so with that, you feel like damaged goods.
Yeah.
And so to talk about it means you have to also acknowledge that you're damaged.
Yeah.
And you know, we spend a lot of time perfecting our look, right? And so when you feel like others can see your scars, that's not so pretty. And so that's why a lot of times, a lot of us choose to mute ourselves because we don't want to deal with that. I mean, I was reading something a couple of weeks ago where a young lady came forward about her sexual abuse. And then when it got to the point where they were going to press charges and things like that, she pulled out. Why did she pull out? Because the way the system is set up, you have to give your full name and address on the documentation, means that your abuser will know where you live. Yep. So when you think about the lawmakers, which is why it's important for us to be involved, even if you're against any level of politics, red, blue, whatever the case is, we need to be involved with government to some degree, because those are the lawmakers that's putting things into place that's keeping people like us muted, because we have those other fears that come along with when we do speak up.
Exactly.
You see, and some of us, and I know people are against or for, and whatever position you stand with this, with the abortion word. Well, you have a lot of women who gave birth to babies who are products of rape, right? So what resources are there for them? Because you can't talk about it.
Exactly.
And then imagine the scarring. You have a constant reminder internally and externally. And let's just be honest, we have our children and we love them, but sometimes they're ungrateful. And so think about if you gave birth to a child, and you're a victim of, this child is a product of rape, and you still chose to go forward with that. And then now they're 15 years old and they're telling you where to go and how to get there.
Child.
Talk about a slap in the face. So, anywho.
No, I mean, you are absolutely right. You know, the way the world is set up, it's not designed to protect women from those types of situations, I feel anyway. I mean, this is not a popular opinion at all, but it is what it is. I mean, that's what's been going on, because, mm-hmm. I mean, not to get political, but you have people that are wanting to run our country and they have that in their history, but everybody's going to act like it's all right. We're going to act like we didn't know that happened.
But if you know anything about mental health, they say a person's past history is a predictor of their future behavior. So
you're absolutely right.
You are
on that. Absolutely right. Exactly. Food for thought. Food for thought. So creating a new destiny, like, it definitely often requires a significant amount of inner strength and resilience. Can you share some pivotal moments or strategies that help you when you were going through your darkest times? Like, did you have those written down, or how did you make it through?
Well, I kind of sort of fly by the seat of my pants most of the time. Okay. And although I'm a writer, when it comes to my personal stuff, I tend to not write a lot. But I really tap into my village first and foremost. So when I've had those dark moments, I tap into my village. The other thing that I do that I used to be afraid to do, and when I did do it, I didn't do it the way I should have, because I had my own judgment, would just cry. That ugly cry is ugly,
hey.
But it's needed, especially if you need to cleanse your soul.
Exactly.
And so I have given myself permission to cry. That's not something that I used to do before. The other thing that I do to build my resilience is I tap into those that have gone before me, mm-hmm. and what drove them. What was their fighting spirit? I inherit or I take in those energies that they possess to help me keep going. For example, I absolutely hated school. Now, this is coming from a person who has a doctoral degree. When I tell you, I don't like paper cuts. And I'd rather get a paper cut than to endure the things that I felt when I was going to school. Mm-hmm. But talk about resilience. I tapped into my mother. My mother was a high school dropout. She was a teen mother. And she just wanted what was best for her girls. She wanted us to have a better life, be exposed to more things, better things. And so going through that journey, after she passed from colon cancer. And I said, I need to pay homage to her. I need to take the shame out of her eyes, because my mother felt and dealt with a lot of shame. And so when I would be studying, I tell you, I should have bought flood insurance for my laptop, because I cried a lot.
That's expensive.
I tapped into her. I tapped into the Gail Phillips of the world. I tapped into this lady that I always think about. Her name is Kate Karen. And I'll tell you, it wasn't popular, but one of the schools that I transitioned to was freshman in high school. And, you know, during that time, you didn't have a whole lot of guidance counselors, what they call it, career counselors, school counselors, or social workers, if you will. So my mother moved us to an area that was predominantly white, so she could expose us to a better life. So they, in their quest to be helpful, they assigned me to a guidance counselor who was black male. And when he looked at my background, he said, "You should just drop out." And so him telling me that I should just drop out, coupled with this white woman by the name of Kate Karen, who looked at my background and said, "No way, Jose, I'm not giving up on you, because you matter." So that, coupled with the negatives from my guidance counselor, coupled with the deacon that molested me, that muted me, coupled with the pain that my mother experienced, coupled with seeing my sisters who were teen mothers push through and pull through and fight and overcome lots of obstacles. Those were the things that I tapped into to give me strength. Those were the things when I saw my grandmothers who were ill, one who, because she grew up at a time when she didn't trust people, particularly white people, and she went on her deathbed, never, ever, ever looking them in the eye. I said, "No way." So anything that was considered taboo, that's what I tapped into. Was it popular? No. Did I feel like a Lone Ranger? Yes. But again, in order to entice change and inflict goodwill, we have to be willing to sometimes deviate from that yellow brick road, because there are lessons that has to be taught. And there are things that we have to learn as we go on this thing, this journey called life. And when life be lifing,
baby,
we got to pull everything. And sometimes the lowest hanging fruit is not the source for you, because it could very well be that fruit that Eve took a bite of.
Well, I already have issues with Eve, so.
Me too.
So sometimes the lowest hanging fruit for me.
But me too. So that's why I know that the lowest hanging fruit is not always where it's at. And so sometimes we have to be willing to climb a little higher. Sometimes we have to be willing to tap into those places that are not popular. So having people in my life, all walks of life, all colors, all genders, all races, those are the people and the things that I tapped into to help me with my resilience.
That's great. That is a full-on village, an active village. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you could just go to them and they would just, you know, wonder twin powers activate.
Let me tell you, I travel all over the world and I always find that one person that I connect with, and they always take care of me. So that's how I know. There was a book I read. It was called When God Winks. Little small book, but it's packed with so much. Mm-hmm. And basically it talks about when you have doubt in your life, you're not sure, you're concerned, you're afraid, something happens and lets you know you're on the right track. Keep going.
Right.
That's God winking on you. So I get a lot of winks in life. Lots of trauma. Lots of cloudy days. However, God always winks on me.
Amen. Listen, high five to God for that. And I think that your village actually helped you to cultivate a sense of empowerment and gain autonomy over your life. And I think that is really important because now it took you from being a victim to now being victorious.
Yes.
So I want to switch gears a little bit because you have just risen over your situation like a phoenix from the ashes. And I just love it. The way you talk about what you have went through in life, you just stand 10 toes down on it. You're so firm. You're so confident about it. And I think just having that type of strength, I can feel your strength through the camera. I really can. And I hope the folks that are listening can feel it as well. I've seen some comments that were being made in the chat. And, you know, I just, I just love how confident you are. You didn't let any of that define who you were going to be. You went ahead, you went through it, you had your process for getting through it, and now you're a boss.
I'm a boss.
You Yay. Are a boss, lady. Yay. So tell me, tell us about your money mindset revolution. How did you come up with that? Where did that come from?
Well, so our mind, this is where, outside of our physical health, this is where our real wealth stands and lives.
Absolutely. Right?
And so the brain power and the power that controls our being. And so one of the things I can talk about is I went through a period in my life where I was overweight. I didn't feel attractive. I became a vegan to overcome that weight, right? Mm-hmm. And I was a fat vegan because I realized that it wasn't what I was consuming. It was what was consuming me. Ah. I also went through a period where I was dabbled in real estate, was a millionaire, and lost it all. So I was a millionaire backwards, right? And then couple that with the traumas that exist. All those things coupled with mind, body, soul, right? And being, what's the word? Taken advantage of
right.
by men forced me to look into myself and say, what can I do to help women overcome? Because lots of us deal with the things that I've dealt with and that I still deal with. And lots of us want to be millionaires. Lots of us want to be healthy. Lots of us want to have good relationships with people. Lots of us want to push past it and get our public high school diploma. All those things. Mm-hmm. So when I thought of this, I said, money, mindset, revolution, we get those things in order, we can start a revolution. Why? Because we are the foundation. We bear the fruit. We own that. And if we can start internally, transfer that energy to the womb, and what we give birth to gives life to every and any and everybody that comes within the sound of their voice, we're unstoppable. So for me, yes. that's where the money mindset came from. I live my life as if I'm writing my own obituary. The people that I touch, I want them to have a revolutionized experience where they can move and shake within the confines of their physical and mental ability. And if that's in question, do what I do. I got myself a gallon of spirit, a glass of reality and therapy, real therapy, a licensed clinician, right?
Exactly.
And a Not shot of wine every now and then. So that's the
a shot of wine.
Wait a shot of wine. So those three things together help me shift my mindset so that I know that shot of wine, it reminds me that it's okay. Because one of the things that I didn't do that I now do, I do have a glass of wine because alcohol was a demon in my life.
Okay.
It's not a demon in my life anymore. Not because I was an alcoholic, but the people I loved were alcoholics. The right. people that I love were substance abusers. And so I want to do opposite of everything that controlled me. And there are people that's listening that is experiencing those same things. So money, mindset, revolution, we are the foundation women. We are the ones that are taking charge in the household. When everybody else says no, our minds, our bodies, and our souls says yes, because no is not an option. When you have a baby crying, when the bills need to be paid, when your significant other is experiencing the woes of life and can't function in the workplace, we still have to keep it going. So that's where and why I gave birth to Money Mindset Revolution.
I love it. Listen, I'm all about the revolution. I am here for it. It will be televised. I took this from your website. It says, Money Mindset Revolution cultivates financial, nutritional, and mental wellness for women by harnessing behavioral economics, mental real estate, and holistic growth, inspiring them to leverage careers and passions for lasting independence, financial freedom, and generational prosperity. Child, yes. That is
it. That's a mouthful.
That is a mouthful. That is a mouthful. But it's just all truth. That's really all we need. And when you said we need to grow from a womb, I'm like, this is a retired womb, but I will definitely give birth to that.
Right.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So you are inspiring me to just keep going with what I'm doing. And I think you and I were meant to have this conversation today because
yeah.
I had a complete meltdown last night. I think my husband was looking at me like I had a third eye because I was just, you know, I have this event that's coming up next weekend and I have so much to do. And I'm like, oh my God, what if people don't buy tickets? What if no one comes, you know? Are we going to have to cancel the event? You know, and so you're just inspiring me to just keep at it. Just don't give up. So I really appreciate you even sowing that seed in me because I'm like, yeah, we're going to be birthing some things really soon.
Yes. Yes. And don't give up on that because whether it's an audience of one or an audience of many, remember, we are the foundation. So we're giving life to something. So one person is able to hear. And they have five children. They have five folks. They heard that message.
That's
and then
true.
They had those children. And there's five more. And then five more. So we all have a responsibility to plant seeds of greatness, to leave our footprints in the sand. We don't want folks eulogizing our death and talking about, oh, she was a doctor. Oh, she had a business. Oh, she had... What is the heart of the soul of that woman? What does she leave? One of the things that I always remember from my mother's funeral, our house was known for I call it the social deviant household. Any and everybody that was impacted by anything in life, drugs, alcohol, transitioning from prison, adjusting to their sexuality, all those things, my mother invited any and everybody in our home. Our home looked like a shelter every day. And my sisters, we would go crazy about it. We're like, oh my God, who else is here? We have to share our space with more folks. But the one thing that I always remember at her funeral was on a Monday on the west side of Chicago, where most people, particularly her latest connections, were not there. And people lined up from everywhere to acknowledge her death and to pay homage to her.
Wow.
People got up and talked about the soul of the woman.
Left
and on her, yes. And although for all practical purposes, my mother would have been considered a write-off for many. She was a teen mother. She was a high school dropout. She was an alcoholic. She had her struggles far from perfect, right? However, she taught her children to love people with the love of the Lord. And if you can do that, you can get past all of those other demons that haunt us. And so I always remember that people showed up. People had canes. People, you can tell they just had a fix, right? But they showed up so that they could say, Joanne, I remember you. Joanne, remember that day when I was struggling? Joanne. And so, although I was checked out for the most part, I was checked in with the energy and the spirit of others. So we have a responsibility to leave our footprints in the sand, to leave us legacy. No, our names may not be on billboards, but they're on the billboards of the heart of man. And that's what we need to do.
Exactly. And that is exactly what's important. A lot of people, they put stock into all the things that they can get in life. Well, let me buy this car. Let me buy this house. Oh, I heard on the radio this morning, this lady said, oh, she has to switch her car every 3 weeks because the last car is just a thing of the past. And I'm like, good God, what are you leaving? You know, how are you spending your money? You know, I 1,000% agree with everything that you're saying. When we leave this earth and when we go to the upper room, when we are at those pearly gates, what are we going to say we have done to make somebody else's life better?
Yes. Yes.
And that's what we really need to focus on. I think a lot of people get so lost in the sauce of life, you know, they get lost and caught up and, you know, enticed, drag out, and they lose their focus on everything. And we have to stay focused, especially as women, because I feel like women build communities And when women activate, we get a lot of things done.
Yes.
And so when we get together, these are the conversations that we need to really be having, because they are so important for us to really just step outside of ourselves. We don't need to compete. We don't need to do any of that. We're all equally bringing our own lights with us.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're gonna build a bonfire. You know, that is what we're doing. And so each one reach one. Whatever we know, we need to teach the other sister. And then that sister is going to teach her daughters. And then that daughter is going to teach her daughters. So we have to really heal all generations of women and empower everyone to really just stay focused and stand 10 toes down on everything that is going to elevate us, that is going to, you know, just level us up. We're in the White House.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
We're one step away from running this country.
Yeah.
Or maybe one hospital visit away from running the country.
One of the two.
One of the two, whichever comes first. But we are in the White House, you know?
Yep.
We have got to stay the course. And I just love everything you say. I love your mom's legacy. And I love that although your life was traumatic, you still learned the lesson. Because some people can get so lost in their trauma. It's a really dark place for them. And you have absolutely come out swinging. Like you said, listen, you're feisty. You're a scrapper. And that's good, because that's exactly who you need to be where you are. And you're in a position where you're leading women. You're like, listen, you're like Moses.
Right.
You're the Exodus. You know,
it's funny, on my mom's obituary, we put a picture of Harriet Tubman, because that's how she functioned.
Wow.
She ran her own Underground Railroad.
And that's what it is. That's it right there. That's the lesson that she's leaving. That's the legacy that she's leaving. And someone else is going to go ahead and, you know, now she's gone. Somebody should be tagged in and they should be running it.
Yep.
I love it. Well, as we close, looking ahead, what aspirations or goals do you have for yourself now that you've reclaimed your power and created a new destiny?
Well, I'm no longer a ventriloquist, so now I'm helping women to give light and not be muted. So any and everybody that's within the sound of my voice, I want to make sure that I am offering them the benefit of using their voice.
Yes.
I was on this journey with pursuing my education and stuff like that, saying, I want to have a seat at the table. I want to make a difference. I want to do that. And the guy reminded me one day, you don't have to fight for a seat at the table. Just build your own table.
So I'm
on this journey now to build my own table. And to help other women build their tables so that all of us can enjoy a supper, the last supper, the first supper, the third supper, the 10th supper, like everybody else. That's the journey I'm on.
That's a great journey. I think I'm on that journey with you. I'm going to bring the hammer and the nails.
Let's go.
Let me know where I need to show up, because
Jesus was a carpenter.
Exactly. Well, hey, we're building our own table. We have to have all the right tools. You know, and some of your sisters here in the chat, they're coming too. They're activated. They're involved.
I'm excited.
Well, your story is undoubtedly inspiring to whoever may be facing similar struggles. What message or advice do you have for those that are still on their path to healing and empowerment?
I advise everyone, to men or women, to give yourself grace, extend mercy, even to those who may have harmed you. Love on yourself. And love is that one word that's used the most in the Bible, because it's so important. And we don't want to think of the word love. And I would tell them, don't think of the word love as a feeling. Think of the word love as a fact. I love me. I love you. I love what God created. I love what's in me. I love what's coming out of me. And hopefully, if they adopt that principle, I think they'll see a shift in their life. yes, there will be some obstacles. Yes, we will be continuing to fight. The girlfriend told me, Ernestine, she told me this the other day. She said, Felicia, you know, you've been through a lot of stuff. She said, but did you know that big ships take a while to turn? Mm-hmm. But when they turn,
baby.
So what I would offer you all within the sound of my voice, what you're battling, what you have experienced may have appeared to be a big ship, but it will turn.
It will turn.
It will
it
turn.
It will turn. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. So where can folks find you on your social media platforms?
Well, I am Dr. Liberated Lisa, so my family calls me Lisa, and I'm welcome in the world to call me Lisa because that means they are an extension of my family. So Dr. Liberated Lisa is where you will find me on all the social media feeds, and I welcome any and everyone within the sound of my voice to, of course, like and subscribe, connect with me so that I can help you connect with yourself or connect with others because we all have a role to play, and our village is growing. And we have work to do.
Yes, we definitely have work to do. We have to get the blueprint ready.
Yes, yes.
Well, I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on this platform. I'm so happy that I was sent your information. I mean, you know, I tend to just run with women that are activated because that keeps me activated. So you have poured into me today. Unknowingly, you have poured into me, and I appreciate it. Yes.
That means my job is done.
Your job is done. You know, if you have helped one person, as the young lady said in the chat, if one person shows up, continue. This is what you said. Thank you for that advice. But if one person, if you have touched one person, you've touched a nation because they're going to learn that and they're going to plant seeds. They're going to be like the bees.
Be like the bees. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for
thank you.
Everyone that has been listening. Thank you so much for gracing the stage. I just love everything that you've said. I think you've inspired a lot of people. I cannot wait for people to really see the playback and the replay of this. I'm going to listen to this again because I might have missed something. I might need to take some notes on. So. Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for saying yes. Thank you for dropping the mic a couple of times. You've dropped the mic. Thank you for being humble. And thank you for trusting me with your story. You know, I hope this was a safe space for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Good, because this is what
well
I aspire.
Done.
Thank you.
Yes.
You know, so, and I thank the audience that has been very active in the YouTube chat. Thank you so much for listening. Do not forget to subscribe and share the channel with your friends. We are going to be doing a lot of things on this YouTube channel. We have Sister Wisdom Wednesdays where it's just a little 30-minute spot where women just come on and they pick a subject. We just talk about it and we just want every woman to be empowered in some way. So yes. I think Wednesday we're going to be talking about menopause for those of you that are there. Listen,
well,
there's some things that some people need to know.
Menopause is my friend.
She's not my friend. No, we are not friends. We are not friends.
She's my friend. Well, I hope to connect with your community, and I definitely am open to if others have space for me in their lives.
Yes.
And they'd like me to speak. Be present.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will be putting your information in the show notes. You know, and of course, if any of the audience is ready to tell their truth, you can DM me, you can hit me up. I am at Save Our Sisters SOS Group. My name is Noreen Foy. That's my Facebook name. That's my government name. I'm on LinkedIn under Noreen Foy. You can definitely check out the website at www.saveoursisters.net. You know, do all the things. So let's all stay in touch. I love this conversation and I will talk to you pretty soon.
Okay.
So until next time.
Bye.
Peace and blessings.
Thank you for supporting this episode. I hope you've been inspired and motivated so you can elevate your life. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe so you're kept in a loop when a new one drops. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcasting platform. I want to engage with you, so let me know what you think by giving the episode a rating, writing a review, or leaving a voice message, and I can share them in an upcoming episode. Now remember to also share this with your tribe. Until next time, remember, overcoming adversity not only teaches us a lot about ourselves, others, and life, but also gives us the opportunity to be reminded of our own power and strength. So don't be afraid to share your story. And when you're ready to do so, email saveoursisters2020@gmail.com.